Hi, everyone. This is Mike Shields. And this week on Next in Marketing, I got to talk to Adweek's programmatic editor, Ronan Shields. Ronan knows the ad tech world better than most, and we covered a ton of ground, including what he sees as the battle for the soul of the internet between tech titans Apple and Google. Let's get started.
Everything we know about the media, marketing, and advertising business is being completely upended thanks to technology and data. We're talking with some of the top industry leaders as they steer their companies through constant change. Welcome to Next in Marketing, presented by AppsFlyer.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Shields. Welcome to Next in Marketing. Today, I've got a very special guest. My oldest son, Ronan Shields, is here from Adweek.
Thank you very much, Mike. Perhaps we should put some rumors to rest out there. Thank you for having me.
Yes. No, Ronan, you are the programmatic reporter at Adweek, right?
Editor, some people say, but no, it's all right. I still write quite a bit. It's no different, just a different title.
I am an Adweek alum, and we do have the same last name, but we are not related, to be clear, although people have asked you about that, right?
Several people, yeah. It's kind of quite funny because, yeah, we're from very different parts of the world. So there we go.
I'm excited to have Ronan on the show because he's one of those people that covers these really important, super complicated parts of the digital advertising business that I feel like a lot of people need to understand, probably know that are really important, but don't always take the time to spend enough of their time just examining how these macro changes going on digital advertising are going to affect everything, but they're really complicated. And I think it's easy to brush past this stuff. So glad you're here. Let's start, it's still the beginning of the year. In your mind, there's so many things going on. What's the biggest story you're watching for in 2021?
So the biggest story I'm watching for, it's a bit of a coin toss, to be frank, and it centers on two companies.
Okay.
Apple and Google, pretty much the war for the soul of the internet, as some of the sources I speak to. Do you go down the premium route and the app route, or do you go down an ad-funded web route? We both know Apple obviously goes down the app route, more premium. I actually have my own thoughts, which we can get to in a while, as to their attitude towards the advertising business. But Google is really having to almost solo try to reinvent the business model of the internet, i.e. behaviorally targeted advertising, which they own through search and both the online display, the programmatic sector. And they're almost having to do that solo with the privacy sandbox stuff, while at the same time having the US government and governments around the world looking over their shoulder with the antitrust cases. So I think that and then the mobile advertising stuff with Apple and iOS 14, I think those are the two big ones for me.
Right, and that's a perfect example. The Google trying to almost rebuild the rules or the fundamental way the business operates, I don't know if everybody's totally paying attention to that. I think everyone knows there are changes coming with cookies and regulation and such, but I don't know that they really are dialed into all that Google is trying to do to ensure that behavioral targeting works, that their golden goose keeps printing money. And I think it's assumed that they're not under any kind of real threat, but things are changing.
Yeah. Mike, I think I would say not even everybody at Google knows what Google is committed to. From the people I speak to, they do seem to suggest that there's almost this internal division within Google. So you have the Google Chrome team, the browser team. These are the people that are driving the privacy settings. And then at the same time, you have the advertising team. And I think, I don't know, this is just the impression I've been given, that they're very much kept separate. Internally, I think probably the optics wouldn't look good if they were seen to be colluding in any way, given the whole antitrust stuff that I mentioned. And when I speak to buyers and sources, they just say Google's not doing a very good job of articulating it to the important stakeholders in the industry. That's an almost universal thing that I hear.
It reminds me of that the same kind of dynamic played out years ago at Microsoft when they were making changes to the way that ads worked in their browser. But it wasn't nearly as massive of an advertising business, so the stakes weren't as high. It didn't like rock the industry where this has that potential. What about, okay, so I want to come back to Google in a second, but look, going back to your earlier comment about the soul of the internet, is it, you described it as apps versus advertising, but is it more than that? Is it Apple's point of view, I think, is their, or at least their marketing messages were all about privacy, and we're kind of inherently against targeting, or we don't, we're not, they don't say that, but there, it's a little bit of an anti-advertising or targeted advertising position. Is that the battle?
Yeah, I think the battle is Apple and Google. So this is what I alluded to earlier. I don't believe for one second Apple's narrative around we respect your privacy. No way, absolutely not. Mike, you and I both know, we talked about the days gone by. Remember iAds in the early part of the 2010s?
Yep.
Back when I could call myself a rookie. I remember they were coming out and pitching hard, and some of my sources went to work there, and all the buyers were like, we would love their data, all the iTunes data, et cetera, et cetera. Absolutely, we'll have that. But they weren't offering it, and especially for the money they were commanding. What was it?
It was like $1 million a day or something for the first sponsorships, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was a minimum $1 million spent. And I remember, just some of the language that the media buyers used to use when they would describe the arrogance of the Apple salespeople. When they would come into, at the time I worked in London, so it's all around Charlotte Street, which is, you know, the British equivalent of Madison Avenue. And they would just say, they would come in, they would say this, and they'd be like, no, well, we need to negotiate on that. And they're like, no negotiations. And then they wind that back in kind of about the mid part of the decade. They kind of very silently closed it. I think they're going to take another run at this advertising market. I think they're doing it very slowly. If you look at some of the T's and C's that they're burying down in their terms of service for consumers, they are starting to alleviate the language. So yeah, I think Apple will take another run at the advertising market. Not this year, maybe next year, because apparently it's a bit of a difficult job.
That's interesting, because if you're describing the cultural challenges inside of Google, it's got to be even more challenging because in Apple, I would imagine, because I feel like there was a faction, even in the time you're describing with iAds and Steve Jobs is still running the company, that was really not interested in advertising at all. You see some of that reflected today. Like, they don't really have an ad business on Apple TV that I know about. Apple News, they outsource it.
Yeah. Again, when I speak to sources that work quite closely with Apple, they are reliant on the iOS ecosystem. They were saying to me that they think probably the big structure is, you know, Apple is primarily a user experience company first. So if they don't think they can get the right UX for the ad experience, they will delay, pulling the trigger and launching that as a service. You know, it's got to be right before it's brought to market. And I mean, that's one thing Apple do best. I mean, every device I'm looking at right now is an Apple device. They do brilliant design. So while I doubt the sincerity of their marketing messaging, I would absolutely believe that they're probably going to come up with a very slick product. And I think iAd 10 years ago was quite a slick offering. It was just the business propositions, you know, as I said.
Yeah, the market was, it was awfully early in mobile advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the other significant difference is that Apple's products are expensive. Google's are largely free. Now, Apple also has to keep growing beyond just, you know, selling devices. So that'll be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, I looked at, I sat in last year on their July earnings call, or was it August? Anyway, it was the Q2 earnings call. And one of the things that they were trumpeting to investors was how their services division was increasing in revenue. And so, you know, that sustainable revenue, et cetera, as anybody listening to this will know. So yeah. That's why I think they are going to take another run eventually, but not this year.
Not unlike, you know, Amazon having its quiet little ad business in their other category, and then all of a sudden if it starts becoming a big deal, and then they get serious about it.
That's an interesting one. I look at their jobs pages and to see what they're saying, and they're constantly they're constantly hiring anyway. But
yeah,
it's definitely. I know some people internally that work in the ads business, and that one's not going away.
Yeah, no, they're quite serious. They don't do they're not as demonstrative. Like you would know better than I do, but they don't do the big splashy can party. Not that anyone has any parties anymore, but they don't shout about their ad business like the others, but they're very serious.
Yeah. Can I ask one question of you, Mike, about Amazon, et cetera? I remember at the start of the year, you know, we're always being asked to write forecasting pieces, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that I put to a contact was like, oh, do you think Amazon will, you know, surpass Facebook this year? And they're like, no, it's much bigger. And then I did look at it. There was a big delta between the earnings, even though Amazon is number three behind Facebook. When do you think that Amazon might eventually surpass Facebook as the number two in the market?
You're not talking, you're strictly talking about advertising revenue, not market
yes,
cap.
Yes, like advertising, that. Not market cap. No.
That's really interesting. Because you might, yeah, that, on the surface, that sounds insane, right? Facebook is so far ahead. But given, I mean, look at how this year has gone, where e-commerce is going through the roof. Their data only gets richer. More people are using them all the time. Every brand seems to be pushing towards e-commerce. And then, they have barely scratched the surface of what they can do in advertising with Fire TV, which is in a lot of households. They have powerful data they can connect there. It's not insane. I mean, Facebook, you know, and of course, you don't know what's going to happen to, you know, are Facebook and Instagram going to split up or at some point, or the government's going to go after them? I don't know. But Facebook, Amazon has a lot of headspace. It's not crazy. And then they could also start outsourcing some of their data in a bigger way and take away, you know, like Google's business isn't just what Google properties, it's so much of the rest of the web. Now Amazon could have a play there. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I like that.
Apparently it won't be happening this year, but according to my sources, but I'd be interested in trying to forecast as to when that sort of nexus point would be, because going back to our experience, I can remember the day that Facebook eclipsed MySpace as the popular social network, and that did feel like a moment. So I'd be interested in another one of those.
Yeah, and it still at that time it felt like MySpace will have a move somehow to get back in this, and you know they've been sold like nine times since then, which is funny. Yeah.
Justin Timberlake didn't pull it off.
Yeah, if he couldn't do it, who could? I'm going to come back to all the stuff you're talking about with Google, but I wanted to come back to, you know, this is a year we constantly keep talking about the big changes in ad targeting and Google's trying to get around them. But when you talk to people, if you had to rank, okay, there's the cookies are going away thing, which is on the horizon, but not this year immediately. There's what Apple's doing with IDFA and mobile targeting. And then there's just broadly regulation in the US and all over the place. What's giving people in this industry more anxiety right now or causing them to scramble more? That answer might vary by category, but what are you feeling the most?
When I speak to the holding group, the media buyer contacts, they say their clients are losing their stuff about cookies and maybe actually underappreciating the Apple IDFA stuff, how that is actually more immediate threat because it is coming any day now, and that they are like a little bit underappreciative of that. So cookies first and foremost, but a big underappreciation of Apple and IDFA and quite what that means.
Do you think that's because that's confusing where they know cookies well, or is it because they're not, if you're not a pure app advertiser or a game or Uber or something like that, it doesn't affect you as much?
Yeah, I do think it is a case of a lot of them thinking like, oh, well, in-app advertising, that's just performance. It's not about branding. The branding stuff is a lot more reliant on cookies. But I think the big brand campaigns are actually probably a little bit more reliant on the iOS ecosystem than they might realize.
Why is that? I think you're right. People think, oh, if I'm not trying to drive installs of my app or trying to, you know, pull together data from various transactions in the app stores, I don't really care, but if brands should care, are they going to be affected by this more?
Yeah, I think it just might be a bit of a unexpected, short, sharp shock, for them. So I think it might be one of those. I just think a lot of people still see mobile advertising, regardless if it's in-app or mobile web advertising, as primarily a performance-based article, proposition.
Right. Yeah. They compartmentalize it a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so come back. Explain to people what Google is trying to do right now, if you can. Everyone knows they're getting rid of cookies, and I think it's often presumed, well, they'll be fine. They've got your most people's data, and you tell them what you want anyway with search advertising. Who cares? But they're going through this massive exercise to try and help either facilitate the industry having some kind of new identity product or leading it. Can you maybe talk about what they're doing and with the sandbox and all these things that people need to understand?
Sure. Well, it was about this time a year ago, shortly after Google confirmed that they were going to deprecate third-party cookies in the Chrome browser in 2022. And I wrote this piece afterwards just talking about the balancing act. And I remember our great art team at Adweek did this graphic of a trapeze artist trying to, you know, walk this like really difficult tightrope. I think they're trying to A, please Wall Street by having those amazing returns in the guise of Alphabet, the parent company, yet trying to please the privacy lobby, which is being led by Apple, in my opinion, as a means of trying to hamstring Google, per my earlier thesis that I explained.
Interesting.
They are also trying to sustain the web, because if they seem to be like crippling the advertising revenue for publishers such as a News Corp and all those legacy mastheads that came from the print world, the governments, the regulators across the world will just come down on them like a ton of bricks. So it is quite a difficult job that they're trying to pull off. I know I'm sounding quite critical of them, but it's not easy. I mean, yeah, can you imagine trying to spin those three plates?
Are they sincere in trying to, presumably, if cookies went away tomorrow, advertising on Google.com and YouTube would be okay. The Google Display Network and all the stuff they do to support the web would take a hit. Is that, but I guess, obviously they care about that revenue, but it's not nearly as big for them. Is it sincere, or is it really trying to look good for the regulators that they're trying to?
Oh, it's trying to look good. Yeah. I mean, you speak to marketers and say, oh, we care about funding journalism, blah, blah, blah. That's BS. You know it, right?
But they care about purpose, right? Don't they?
Whatever. but, you know, they're going about getting things. They look at it from a math angle. They don't look at it from a societal angle. Google is exactly the same. They look at it from saying, they're like, okay, we have to be seen to be funding journalism. Great. I believe them in their sincerity when they say we have to be seen to be funding journalism, blah, blah, blah. Look, Mike, look what happened. So we are recording this on, what is the date? 22nd of January. Just yesterday, they threatened to remove all services from Australia because they proposed to tax Google for using news content in their search results. And said, well, all right, well, we'll just remove our search engine from Google.
Right.
So there's the sincerity there.
Yeah. And that's a good example. Like the U.S. ad market right now is totally distracted by inauguration, all these other things going on. That I don't even know if people realize that. Like half the marketers, like they are not screwing around with those things. So what they're doing, tell us what the privacy sandbox is. Why does it matter? And maybe get into the W3C if you can.
Privacy sandbox is a way of sustaining an ad-funded ecosystem within the Chrome browser with enhanced targeting tools. One such thing is one of the most proposed methods is called Flox. So as opposed to the one-to-one targeting, which you can currently do as things are right now and have been, Flox stands for, and let me get this right in my head, sorry, Federated Learning of Cohorts. So what that does is that the browser will identify you as part of a cohort depending on the behavioral signals that you're sending out. They will then periodically use some of the behavioral signals that they will send to you to go to the, let's just call it the ad part of the business where you can be targeted. So they won't know it's Mike. They'll know that you are a man in the northeast of America that is, you know, submitting these kind of signals that would indicate that you are...
I'm an avid hiker and an ace archer.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, okay. So let's be clear though. The sandbox is an industry initiative, but it's Google's, right?
Yeah. In the same way that if we're talking about advertising targeting initiatives, the same way as Unified ID is the trade desks, but it's not. They're introducing each other. No, it's open source. Anybody can play with it. It's primarily driven by Google. It's all coming out of Google.
So, okay, it seems obvious, but why don't people like this? Assuming, okay, so Google's obviously going to take care of themselves, but if this, could this work theoretically, and they're the ones with the browser, what are they supposed to do? I know they're in the ad business, but what's the problem here?
Well, yeah, as you say, everybody thinks that Google is going to take care of Google first. Yeah, and then they'll work out some way of, they'll say this, but then if you go down into the T's and C's, like, oh, right, so the answer for all this is keep advertising with Google or keep Google plugged into your ad stack. I think a lot of people are thinking that it's just going to be a case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
But Google lets or gives the appearance of letting the folks from the industry participate in the sandbox or help its development, right?
Well, yeah, they are using, to the point you made, W3C, which is a internet standards body that is primarily driven by Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the founder of the World Wide Web. Not the founder, the inventor, for want of a better word, probably a better way to put it. And they kind of use it to rubber stamp a little bit of their ideas already. So it's just kind of like a lot. The criticisms are certainly that it's just them going and giving themselves a big pat on the back saying, well done, you. Yeah. And the rest of the world agrees with you. As you know, with the congressional report that was published in, I believe, in October of last year, the authors of that report, so in the US Congress, they called out what they perceived to be an outsized influence of Google on that web standards body.
But so, okay, let me ask you a stupid question. Why do we have this other standards body? Like, why wouldn't this be an IAB thing? Like, why isn't the ad industry all do this together? Is it seen as more neutral, more non-profit-y or something? Like, what's the...
Yeah, it's non-profit-y, and it's got, obviously, the patronage of Sir Tim Berners-Lee. I mean, a man who's, like, just literally fundamentally changed everybody's life in
right.
the world, right?
And he's got a sir in his name, so...
Yeah, you know, they love a bit of patronage over in Great Britain. But, yeah, when I speak to some of my sources for a recent article that I wrote, they told me that there was a bit of a separation internally within the W3C members. And that it is founded by the academics, the Sir Tim Berners-Lees of the world, and the web engineers, the real purists, mm-hmm. and that they see themselves increasingly being polluted by the ad-funded people. So let's just face it, everybody listening to this podcast.
They're the polluters in this case.
Yeah, this is the I'm talking about, this is the perception within the W3C that somebody from an ad-funded part of what he was explaining right. to me. Things like, yeah, we got to limit the influence of these ad guys, apparently the privacy hawks, should we call them?
Right.
And saying, yeah, we got to limit these ad guys and what they're doing to our beautiful World Wide Web. And there was a recent W3C election and that took place over the holidays. So when we transitioned from 2020 to 2021, mm-hmm. and Google put a candidate up and they didn't get voted in.
Interesting. Now, okay, all this stuff you're describing, it's fascinating, but it's a little weird. It's a little, I don't know if it's the same headlines that the industry, if you're following, oh, Disney Plus is launching all these crazy cool things. Is the average ad salesperson, media agency executive, big brand, are they paying, is it hard for them to pay attention to this stuff and should they be more dialed in?
Yeah, it is difficult for them to keep a pace with things. I mean, it is literally my job, full-time job,
right?
And I struggle and I don't have to sell anything, right? So
I think Google probably likes it that way.
Divide and conquer, right? Divide and conquer.
Or just, you know, a little bit murky is okay. You know, don't worry about it.
Yeah. What is it the ancient Romans said? Panem et circenses, just give them bread and circuses and they'll be fine. Yeah, it is murky out there and that's very good for business if you are big tech because right. they just have all the answers. Just write keep the checks coming and they'll just do it for you.
Okay. Now you mentioned what the Trade Desk is doing. Mm. Another also very important, could be fundamentally have huge ramifications for the business thing. They're trying to come up with, I think, aside from the sandbox thing that you described, the cohorts, they want to have a universal identifier that isn't a cookie where you know that I'm Mike the Hunter, but no one knows who I am and everybody knows that and you can use that information. Explain that to us and what do you think its prospects are?
So the Trade Desk's Unified ID first came about in late 2018 when the writing was kind of on the wall that those that could see the chessboard and how the pieces would lay out, that they could see those moves ahead. So they came up with the Trade Desk's unified ID. It was the trade desks. Then after Google confirmed that they were going to remove support for third-party cookies within the Chrome browser come 2022, the trade desk started coming up with a unified ID 2.0. And this is initially going to be based off hashed email addresses. So they're having to go to publishers and say, hey, can you see about this? Like, look, if you sign up to this, we'll be able to give you more money because we'll be able to better target audiences. And that's the theory of how it will work. It is open and interoperable with other solutions such as Prebid. But as I mentioned earlier on, they are trying to distance themselves from being seen as the owners of a unified ID 2.0 because, again, from sources were telling me there was a little bit of kickback they were getting from the market saying that, oh, well, why should we just use the trade desk stuff?
Right, because presumably if everyone uses this ID, everyone will use the trade desk to buy other media. That would be my theory, right?
Yeah, that's how you become a $40 billion company.
Right, right. The Google approach to me sounds a little more data science-y, probabilistic, guessing who people are, but not where this is like a little bit more, we're going to know who that person is. We're not going to know your name or whatever, but it's going to be more precise. Is that a fair way to look at it?
I think that would be an accurate assessment per my understanding.
Okay. So how is that going in your eyes? Are publishers going to want to share all this gold they have? If you got some email addresses, do you want anybody to share that? Is that, how likely is the cooperation?
I've heard a few different things from different sources. So the trade desk at last count had 11 partners signed up to it. Probably the most notable of which, for your question, is the Washington Post.
Okay. Which is owned by a guy who's maybe has a thing against some of these other companies.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. But then if you remember to 12 months ago, again, just after Google confirmed that it was going to pull its move in 2022, and then the IAB called for, was it Project REARC or the Great Collab? Something like that. I think that was some of the terminology they were using. Well, I remember just coming back from that conference, I thought, okay, well, it was a very US-centric conference. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call some of my contacts from around the world and try and get what they think about that. And I was talking to a contact that is based in the UK, a publisher contact. And what this person said to me was like, hold on, why would I contribute some of my data that can be used to target audiences all around the web? I would just be, you know, putting the dagger in the hand of my assassin. Because if there's a solution where you can target audiences all around the web on the long tail, well, then that's going to divert spend away.
Right. It's going to put everybody in the same playing field. I don't have many advantages left anymore as a publisher. That's one thing I got, right?
So that was a really, really interesting point that I haven't read it in any press release, but yeah. Right.
Do the Trade Desk and Google like each other? Are they enemies in this one? Are they at odds or are they just doing their own thing?
I think they are at odds. What is the phrase Sir Martin Sorrell uses? It?
Frenemies.
Yeah. I think they have to do business together. But if you just listen into any of the Trade Desk's quarterly earnings calls, as soon as they go, they'll talk about being independent ad tech. You know, there needs to be a realistic contender to rival the Googles of the world, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, right. Frenemies.
Yeah, but yeah, they want to subtly suggest that the world of the walled gardens is not good and we need to change that. Okay, this is two-part question. There are several other companies trying to do some kind of universal ID.
Yeah.
Do we think that will work? Any of those will have a chance? And then do any of these things, the Trade Desk included, do they answer the IDFA problem with Apple or are they really strictly a desktop web thing?
Yeah, okay. So to the first part, there are several initiatives, but they're all interoperable. I think they all realize that we're better together. We have to do this. Otherwise, we'll just get crushed by the big players.
But so, okay. So those are all going to, they're not trying to beat the Trade Desk thing necessarily. They're all trying to work doing the same mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Live together or die alone type stuff. Yeah.
But do any of them have an answer for what Apple is trying to take away?
Honestly, I think no.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so many of the things we're talking about are regarding advertising targeting, I think, for the most part. I wonder how this, all this swirl affects attribution in your mind, if it does. Because that's such a key question, I think, you know, I think the ad world's been trying to have a perfect solution for attribution forever. Facebook's very good at it. Google's good at it. The fervor for performance advertising of the last 6 months has gotten so many brands hooked on being able to prove every dollar has done something. Does all this change attribution, make it harder, easier, better? Don't know.
It definitely makes it harder, but one thing I would say, from what I understand, not many people are very sophisticated with it in the first place.
Yeah,
that last click attribution still is the predominant model in the market.
Mostly we think over credits, the last thing you saw, often it's your search ad or something like that. So it's not, that's oversold in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. So it will make it harder, but they weren't doing a very good job in the first place.
Okay, a couple more things, Ronan. I don't want to keep you forever. This is terrific. One thing I was thinking of, you mentioned Amazon, how could they become as big as Facebook? All of a sudden you have like every retailer is trying to co-opt the Amazon playbook, it seems, where they're either trying to use ads to keep just to promote products on their own marketplaces and sites, or they're maybe seeing a bigger opportunity here. Like, you know, between Target, Walmart, now like CVS, Walgreens.
Yeah.
What do you make of that explosion? Are there too many of these at once? Is it good for the industry because they have data? Like, where is that going to go?
I think it's a really good development for the industry. You know, it's not illegal to make money, and those retailers are figuring out what to do, how to monetize this data that they were just sitting on anyway, and usually fighting over it with their CPG partners, and you know, the kind of the stuff that's actually on the shelves, right?
Right.
Admittedly, I will say I haven't spoken to too many media buyers about it to see just how seriously are they taking it in terms of putting it on their media plans. But you look at it on paper, and it looks good. And let's face it, competition is good for markets, right? So yeah.
I wonder if from the media buyer perspective, does it just become a specialty thing? If you sell stuff in CVS, you buy some ads to promote it, or has it become like a bigger play where they can use all this data and find different people and avoid the walled gardens that they don't love? I don't know.
Well, when you do talk to buyers in general, they say they want to limit their limit their reliance on the walled gardens. So again, that's good.
Yep.
Given that this whole pandemic stuff is still going to play out for another while, I don't know how easy it will be for them to win influence. You know, I'm guessing there's not too many jeans parties or fancy dinners or lunches going on these days. So let's be safe. You all know that plays a big part in how media budgets get allocated, right?
No, this is a business of networking and relationships. It's hard.
You know what, Mike? Since you asked, I'm going to revisit that one at some point.
All right. I just gave you an awesome story. My God.
Thank you.
the last thing, it's kind of a big one to end on, but it's important. You've alluded to the pressure that Google feels from the feds, and both Google and Facebook have some serious, you know, they either have states, attorney generals going after them, the government going after them from the federal level. But you know, but all of a sudden we have a new administration. I don't know whether that changes everything, if regulation fades into the background because COVID's such a big deal, or maybe that doesn't matter because the outside the U.S. the pressure is going to be so strong anyway. So like, how do you think about regulation in 2021 and what's really going to happen?
Undoubtedly, we all know this. There is a push for a national U.S. national federal privacy law, which I think makes sense. You know, it's a bit bonkers, especially the way the world is, to think that, you know, you have to have different privacy laws from somebody in Delaware, New Jersey, New York, et cetera.
Ronan, have you seen how we've handled the vaccine over here and the testing and things like that?
Well, I don't think anybody outside of South Korea, New Zealand, and Germany is making a great job of it. So undoubtedly there will be another push. When I speak to some sources within the IAB who are, you know, acting as the lobbyists in chief, and Privacy for America, I believe, is the umbrella group taking in the IAB, Forez, ANA, et cetera, they led me to believe that they got quite far along, but then, you know, the world went the way it went after March 2020, and it just got scrapped. So I think undoubtedly there will be a push. It's better that this stuff is regulated and so that the players can at least be brought to book, as opposed to having a Wild West or a patchwork of different laws. So I think that one will, you know, obviously be pursued. When we talk about antitrust stuff, I think nothing's changed. Those you know, it's with the courts now. So
it's not like Biden's here and they go, those suits go away. That's not how it works.
Yeah, yeah. Think about it. Like, he was vice president under Obama, and big tech did okay then. I know that's things have changed now. I think there will be a little bit more peering. It's like, oh, this is starting to get a little bit problematic. If you want a prediction, I think Google will either voluntarily or be forced to divest of the DoubleClick business, or the business that was known as DoubleClick.
And that could have a lot of ramifications. That's not a small thing.
Yeah, I think it is comparatively small for Google, because search is still what?
Right.
90% of the revenue.
Bigger for the rest of the industry, maybe, than for them.
Yeah, huge, great opportunities.
Yeah.
I think that would be a very, very good thing for the market.
I like that. All right, let's end on a big, bold prediction. Ronan, awesome stuff. Thank you for taking so much time out to take us through these really complicated, thorny issues. Great, great conversation. Appreciate you being here.
No. Thank you, Mike. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Peace out, everyone.
A big thanks to my guest this week, Adweek programmatic editor Ronan Shields, and of course, my partners at AppsFlyer. If you like this episode, please take a moment to rate and leave a review. We have lots more to bring you, so be sure to hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you next time for more on what's next in marketing.